Govind ki, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 28, Text 10 and 11. So we can chant Text 10 together, then we'll chant Text 11 responsively. Done? Are we done? Is it good enough? Maybe we can chant. We can start. So, Nandastu, we can chant together. Nandastu atindriyam drishtva lokapala mahodayam Krishna cha sannatim tesham jyatibhyo vismito bravet. So the translation. Nanda Maharaj had been astonished to see for the first time the great opulence of Varun, the ruler of the ocean planet, and also to see how Varuna and his servants had offered such humble respect to Krishna. Nanda described all this to his fellow cowherd men. So we could we'll chant, first we'll do the word meanings and then we'll chant the verse. They, cha, and, autsukya, full of eagerness, dhiyaha, their minds, rajan, O king Parikshit, matva, thinking, gopaha, the cowherd men, tam, him, ishwaram, the supreme lord, api, perhaps, naha, to us, swagatim, his own abode, sukshmam, transcendental, upadhasyat, is going to bestow, adhishwaraha, the supreme controller. Let's chant responsibly. Te chaut sukya dhiyo rajan, matva gopastam ishwaram, apinaha swagatim sukshmam, upadhasya dadhishwaraha te chaut sukya dhiyo rajan matva gopastam ishwaram apinaha swagatim sukshmam upadhasya dadhishwaraha te chaut sukya dhiyo rajan matva gopastam ishwaram apinaha swagatim sukshma upadhasya dadhishvaraha. So before the Prabhus will chant, I just realized I forgot to say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, so I'll do it. I'm still trying to get used to this format. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Maybe Prabhus can chant. Techal sukya diyo raja matva gopastamishwaram apinaha swagatim sukshmam upadhasya dadhishvaraha. Techal sukya diyo raja matva gopastamishwaram apinaha swagatim sukshmam upadhasya tadishwaraha. Mataji? Techal sukya diyo raja matva gopastamishwaram apinaha swagatim sukshmam upadhasya tadishwaraha. Techal sukya diyo raja matva gopastamishwaram apinaha swagatim sukshmam upadhasya tadishvaraha. So translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Translation: hearing about Krishna's pastimes with Varuna, the cowherd men considered that Krishna must be the Supreme Lord, and their minds, O King, were filled with eagerness. They thought, will the Supreme Lord bestow upon us His transcendental abode? Purport: the cowherd men were filled with excitement upon hearing how Krishna had gone to the abode of Varuna to rescue his father, suddenly realizing that they were in fact dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They joyfully conjectured among themselves about their auspicious destination after finishing their present life. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we are reading this chapter, Krishna Rescues Nanda Maharaj. And we are at a point here where after Nanda Maharaj has been abducted by Varuna's servant, Krishna goes to Varunadev's palace and to rescue Nanda Maharaj. And when he goes there, Varunadev falls at his feet. He offers him obeisances and says that his life has become fulfilled by beholding Krishna, Krishna's personal form. And so while this is going on, Nanda Maharaj is a witness to that. And in this translation, the first verse is described how he's astonished to see the great opulence of Varuna, and then he's astonished to see how Varuna and his servants, these opulent demigods, are offering respect to Krishna. And so, the word there, the Sanskrit is sannatim, the offering of obeisances, sannatim. Mahaudayam, the great opulence of Varunadev, Nanda Maharaj sees that, and then this opulent personality is offering obeisances to Krishna. Nyatibhyaha. So he's explaining, abravit, he's explaining this scene, he's describing this scene to his friends and relatives, Nyatibhyaha, which are the Brajavasis, the cowherd men in Vrindavan. And then the next verse explains that when the cowherd men hear this, then they begin to consider that Krishna must be the Supreme Lord, because the great demigod Varun is offering obeisances. And so the veil of yoga maya has lifted now, and they suddenly realize that this boy is this Krishna, who is such a naughty child, and who passes stool and urine in their houses, breaks the butter parts of their wives, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, so they come to that realization. Although this happens for a short time, so in Vrindavan we understand that, you know, the veil of yoga maya lifts, they come to the realization, the leela is done, and then they forget about it. So it's not a permanent thing. It's a very short time with the, you know, awareness of Krishna's Aishwarya. And so once they become aware of that, then there is a desire that comes into their heart. And that desire is to seek Krishna's transcendental abode. And they're just thinking of it. They don't say it out that we want this, but that desire is there. And Krishna, being all-knowing, the super soul in the heart, he knows that this is their desire. And the rest of the chapter describes how that desire is fulfilled by Krishna. So I was meditating on this desire that has come up in their hearts. We understand that the Brajavasis' only desire is to serve Krishna. They are either in the Madhurya Bhav or the Vatsalya Bhav or the Sakya Bhav. So the cowherd men who are being described here, Gopas, the cowherd men, they have Vatsalya Bhav for Krishna. You know, there is their little boy. Now they are put in the position where they realize his Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then they are getting a desire, and the desire is to see the transcendental abode. So I want to talk about this desire that came into their mind by contrasting it with the desires that would come into the minds or in the hearts of the various grades, the various levels of both transcendentalists and non-transcendentalists, people who are materialistic. So let's consider the Jnani. If we consider that the Jnani is reading these pages of the Bhagavatam, and he looks at this verse and he says, okay, these people are considered the topmost transcendentalists by these devotees. Okay, we consider the Brajavasis the perfection of devotion. They've achieved the perfection of devotion. And what do they want when they get the chance to ask for something higher? They want to see something. I mean, that's basically what they want. They want to see Krishna's abode. But the Jnani would say, well, these coward men are in ignorance. They are in this town of Braja, Vrindavan. They're going with their cows into the summer heat, into the winter cold, grazing them in the forest, cleaning their stool and urine, milking the cows. What hard work. And they don't understand they're suffering. These Brajavasis are ignorant. They're in ignorance. They don't understand they're suffering. And the goal of life is to understand that we are suffering and then give up this world, renounce it, and get liberation, moksha. And that liberation is merging into the effulgence of the Supreme Brahman. So for the Jnani, is the Supreme Brahman, the Param Brahma, is the ultimate reality. It's higher than these personal descriptions, personal form of Krishna. It is higher than the abode, place of living. All that is irrelevant. You know, we are supposed to be merging into this homogeneous life. Of course, the Mayavadis are worse. The Mayavadis would say that this is foolishness. The Brajavasis need to understand their gods themselves. Okay, and if once they come to that realization, then they will not hanker for anything else. Their god, Namo Narayana, you know. And the misguided yogi might think that he had the chance of a lifetime to ask for some mystic potency. Like Durvasa Muni can go anywhere in the universe at the speed of the mind, they could have asked for the ability to travel wherever they want, and then they would have seen all the abodes they want, all the Vaikuntha planets, the infinite Vaikuntha. They could have gone to anywhere, and they could have asked for anything. Right? So the Brajavasis, not very intelligent. That would be the conclusion. The demons, if they were in this position, they would ask for some clever boon. I shouldn't be killed at this time, this place, not by the humans, not by the demigods, not by this, not by that. And the ultimate goal is to become God, more powerful than God, to become the most powerful man in the universe. man or whatever, living entity in the universe. So I missed out. The Karmis would think, well, these coward men, not very intelligent. They go to the forest, they're grazing their cows. They could at least have asked for a multinational milk selling business or something, you know, make millions of dollars, become the Bill Gates of cow farming and milk production, milk selling. Ask for a good wife or two or three. Ask for heaven after this world. Like King Midas, everything that he touches turns to gold. They could ask for something boon like that. So people have different inclinations, motivations. And so if you're face to face with God, then what are you going to ask for? That's basically what I'm trying to convey here. And what the Vrajavasis don't ask for tells us something about them. They're not asking for any of these things. I mean, it makes you wonder why they would ask for just seeing the transcendental abode of Krishna. It's described in the purport here that they joyfully conjectured among themselves about their auspicious destination after finishing their present life. So they're transcendentalists. They're in the Vedic fold. We understand that they are in the Varnashram society, where they are the coward men, the Vaishyas, Krishigo Rakshavani Jam, that's their business. And but at the same time, they have the idea, the Vedic knowledge and the understanding that Lord Narayan Vaikuntha is the supreme personality of Godhead. So you wonder why they would want to see it. But the Vrajavasis don't want to see it because they have the desire to go there. Okay, they might see it as a magnificent spectacle, as a magnificent display of opulence, Krishna's opulence. And then they say, okay, but we are happy with Braja. You know, we are happy with Krishna. We are happy with grazing the cows and serving Krishna in that way. I was reminded of Arjuna's situation in a similar way. Arjuna is in Sakyabhava with Krishna, but when the Bhagavad Gita was spoken for whatever hour or two, he was put in Aishwarya, he was put in ignorance, and then he was brought to Aishwaryabhava, and then Krishna reveals his position as a Supreme Person. And then Arjuna asks in the 11th chapter to see the Vishwarupa, the form of Krishna that pervades this universe, the Vishwarupa. And then Krishna obliges. So there the desire of Arjuna is to see the magnificence, the awe-inspiring power of Krishna. But when Krishna shows that, Prabhupada has a very interesting comment there. Devotees are not interested in the godless opulence of the Vishwarupa. Godless opulence. Although God is showing this form, you know, these thousand hands, so many legs and mouths, and the warriors are being crushed under the teeth of this universal form, and Arjuna is trembling in fear. He loses his composure. And he says, please take this away. Please show me your four-handed form. With Shankha Chakra Gada Padma Kiritinam Garinam Chakra Hastam Ichhami Twam Drashtum Aham Tathaiva Teneva Rupena Chatur Bhujena Sahastra Baho Bhava Vishwamurte. O Vishwarupa, please take away your thousand hand form and show me that four handed form of Narayan Vishnu. So Krishna obliges, and then after that he shows him the Saumya Rupa. Prabhupada translates it as the beautiful form, Saumya, beautiful form of Krishna. So Krishna shows him that beautiful form, which is Manusham Rupa. It's a human-like form that has two hands. And that form is what the Brajavasis see every day. The Brajavasis are seeing Krishna in his seven-year-old, he's lifting Govardhan, and they're seeing that form every day. And that actually shows us the position of the coward man. So now I will try to refute these conceptions of the Jnanis and the Yogis and the Karmis that the Brajavasis are less intelligent. Because Krishna gives us information, or gives us clear, unequivocal instructions on this. So in the 11th chapter at the end, after he shows him his two-handed form, he says, Sudurdarsham idam rupam. This form is very difficult, Sudurdarsham, to see. Deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshana kangshinaha. The demigods, Varun Dev is one of them, they are all eternally nityam desiring to see this form. So if the higher the reality, the highest, the supreme absolute truth was formless, okay, then why are these demigods not able to get a glimpse of this form? What is so special about Krishna's form then? You know, his two-handed Saumya Rupa, what's so special about it? Even the demigods are constantly hankering to get this, to see this form. So this Varuna Dev pastime, this Krishna Rescues Nanda Maharaj chapter is explaining how Varuna considers his life fulfilled when he sees Krishna's two-handed form. So that tells us the position of the Brajavasis. They are actually higher than all the demigods, isn't it? Because they are seeing Krishna every day. So they are higher than Shiva, than Brahma, than Indra, all these Varun, these are all, you know, Brahma and Indra especially, you know, they came to the realization that Krishna in his form as Krishna in Vrindavan is the highest absolute, supreme absolute truth. So Deva Apiyasya Rupasya Nityam Nansha Kanshana. So that establishes the Brajavasis position right away. They are the highest. They are higher than. And then the next verse establishes the supremacy of bhakti and the inferiority of all the other paths. So na ham vedair, na tapasa, na dhanena, na cha ejjaya, shakya evam vidho drashtum drashtvanasi mam yatha. O Arjuna, as you are seeing me standing here before you, it is not possible to achieve that distinction by na ham vedair, by the study of the Vedas, which is what the Gyanis do. You know, the smart Brahmanas in India, they will memorize the Vedas. So there is the Dvivedi and the Trivedi and the Chaturvedi. They have all memorized all of these thousands of verses, studied it. But what's the use? Because Krishna says, Naham Vedai. It's not by the study of the Vedas that you'll get the absolute highest perfection in life. Naham Vedai na tapasa. All the yogis that might be standing on one leg with all the poses of the Ashtanga yogis, breathing exercises, na tapasa. Not useful. No, dhanena. If somebody is doing mundane charity, trying to, the philanthropists in the world today, right, the highest, manav seva, he madhav seva hai, that's the Hindi term which says that, you know, serving humanity, serving mankind, is serving Krishna. You know, that conception, philanthropy. But that's not going to get us to the highest perfection. That's refuted. No, dhanena, na cha ejjaya, not the worship. Prabhupada translates it as not worship, official worship, not official worship. So that means we do it for formality. We go to the temple, maybe we go to the temple of the demigods, that's not going to be helpful for us. But if you go to the temple of Ram or Krishna, but we do it for official purposes, not with any feeling in the heart, then na dhanena icha ejjaya shakya evam vidho drashtum drashtvanasi mam yatha. It is not possible with these processes to see me as you see me standing before you, Arjuna. And then comes the solution. How do you do it? Bhaktyatva ananyaya. Devotional service, unalloyed, ananyaya, not tinged with the effects of karma and jnana. Bhaktyatva ananyaya shakya evam vidho drashtum. You can see me and enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So seeing the personal form of Krishna requires pure devotional service. Basically, that's the conclusion in the 11th chapter. And so the Brajavasis have achieved the perfection of life. They are the topmost transcendentalists. They are not the less intelligent, sentimental devotees that would be made out by the intellectual, mental speculators and philosophers. They are the highest. Reality. And then so Brajavasis, they want to see Krishna's abode. So, you know, how many times have we heard from Srila Prabhupada, go back to home, back to Godhead. You know, he keeps saying this over and over and over again. That's our objective. Our objective is to go back home, which is the transcendental abode of Krishna. So the transcendental abode of Krishna is mentioned, is described in the scriptures. Krishna refers to it in the Bhagavad Gita many times. Tries to explain to us that you know, there is a higher reality in many, many, many verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Again and again, he reminds us, yad gatva na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. Going where we'll never return, Tad dhama, that is my transcendental abode. Paramam, it's a transcendental abode. Yad gatva nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. And then he contrasts that with the material world. Anityam asukham lokam. This world is not transcendental, it's temporary. Anityam asukham, it's full of misery. Imam lokam, this world is like that. And so it seems like a no-brainer to anybody who has received the instructions of Lord Krishna through the disciplic succession, heard it from self-realized souls like Srila Prabhupada, it becomes a no-brainer, it becomes so obvious, so self-evident that this world is a place of suffering and misery and we need to get out of here. And there is a world, Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Vriksha Lakshavateshu Surabhir Abhipalayantam. There is a world which is described in the scriptures, which is Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu. It is made of, the houses there, the abodes, Prabhupada explains in the lecture, are made of, for lack of a better translation, touchstone. So that means they satisfy any desire that might come in the mind, you know, of the residents. Kalpa, Vruksha, Lakshavriteshu, there are millions and millions of, you could say, infinite number of desire trees in this transcendental dham, abode. Surabhir Abhipalayantam. What is Krishna doing? Who is the source of all this? He is tending to the cows. So, you know, just to give you a personal anecdote, I was visiting the university, Brown University, I don't know if anybody's been there, but a couple of months ago, 3 months ago. And Brown University is a beautiful campus, and you get some of the most, you know, it's full of rich kids, the best cars are driving around, they have the best clothes, and nice cultured people. They have tall buildings with very high achievements. You know, they used to have some of the best pure mathematics research in the world. So it's like a mecca for people who are doing mathematics or applied mathematics research. And so I was there for a conference, and when you're there, sangha dosha, when you're with people, you associate with people who are all these intellectuals, then that creeps into your mentality. And I remember walking down the street, and I was thinking to myself, Krishna is the highest reality in Vrindavan, and what is he doing this time? And what are his topmost devotees doing? They are grazing the cows and cleaning the, you know, they're using gobar, you know, stool of the cow, and they're putting it on the walls, and that's what they're doing. Milking, churning butter. And here I'm walking down the street and I'm saying, well, look at all these accomplishments. Such high intellectual activity here, you know, such beautiful thought. Philosophy also, although philosophy doesn't appeal to me so much anymore, because nothing can beat the Bhagavad Gita's philosophy. 700 verses, all the other philosophies fail. But so, you know, I was thinking, okay, what happens? Let's say I meet Krishna, like the Brajavasis met you. I was thinking a few months ago, what am I going to do? I mean, let's say I had this chance to talk to him. And then I was, you know, this intellectual frame of mind, I was thinking, well, I could ask him about relativity, I could ask him about quantum mechanics, some of the problems that puzzle the scientists today. I mean, how did he accomplish all this? I mean, what are those strings doing? And so, you know, what are these electrons really? I mean, how can something be a particle and a wave? I was thinking to myself that there are so many deep questions, deep discussions one could have with Krishna. DNA and all this complexity, and protein, structure, there's so many unsolved problems in science. And then I was contrasting that with the Brajavasis. I was thinking, how is it that the Brajavasis are the highest reality? And I knew the answer, but I was still chewing on that. So of course I went and asked some devotee. Chaitanya Charan Das, who has this website, spiritualscientist.com, and I asked him, how is this the highest? So he responded, the highest reality in the world is love. So one might talk about relativity, and one might talk about mathematics and theorems and detailed intellectual pursuits, but they are all actually veiled attempts at becoming God you know, because we're trying to enjoy accomplishments. We're trying, everything in this world is tinged with this lusty desire to enjoy and become something we are not. So that's really illusion. Okay, it's not really useful to understand this world if we understand it independently of who created it, who put it together. It's not useful. And also, where is the love if you're just going to be calculating, crunching numbers? You could say, well, I fell in love with numbers. But that's just falling in love with the infinite opulences of Krishna. Right? Whatever beautiful, whatever glorious we see in this world is just a spark of Krishna's splendor. So I had to remind myself of these verses. And then Chaitanya Charan Prabhu explained that love is the highest. And the Brajavasis have achieved such love, such pure love for Krishna, no intellectual can accomplish that. It's really beyond the capacity of intellectuals to understand love or to control or to, you know, you can't study for an exam and get love for Krishna. You can't study and get love. You can't calculate and love somebody. And ultimately, deep down, these intellectuals are all hankering for love. Okay, they might get the accomplishments, but they want somebody to recognize them for their accomplishments also. I think it's a fallacy to say, I'm able to solve this problem, this difficult problem, and that's the reward in itself. I don't think such a thing exists. That's just bluster. It's just bluff. Everybody is lonely inside, and they want a relationship with others. So relationships immediately become higher than everything else. The scientist might sit in his ivory tower, do the calculations, but he goes home and plays with his kids ultimately. He tries to get married, you know, he tries to get some good friends to talk about science. So that's what the Brajavasis have accomplished, and so they are really higher than all the jnanis, the yogis, the karmis, anything else in this world. So coming back to this topic of the transcendental abode, we want to go back home, back to Godhead, and Srila Prabhupada, who is infinite mercy, has given us a process that if we stick to and follow, we will one day become like the Brajavasis. That's our goal. Okay? And all other goals fall away, all other pursuits. Prabhupada has shown their inferiority by his immense scholarship, understanding of the scripture, and also his self-realized soul. So if you just follow the instructions of our spiritual master, we will one day become... Supreme Lord, it says here, they part. Will the Supreme Lord bestow upon us his transcendental abode? The answer is yes, if you follow this process. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you very much. Is there any comments, questions?
Thank you for the class. Just one question I have. A little confusion here. We understand that love involves selflessness, but here the residents of Vrindavan, they seem to be asking for something from Krishna. Mm-hmm. So how is their love the topmost if they're wanting something and they, oh, now he's the Supreme Lord, so you want something.
Yeah, so, you know, my understanding of it is that, like Arjuna explains in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. In that verse, it's a very interesting verse. Arjuna is calling Krishna Param Brahma, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Param Dhamma is also the transcendental abode. And then in the next line, he says, Purusham Shashvatam. So he says, you are the Supreme Person. So Krishna and his dham are non-different. So when the Brajavasis are desiring to see his transcendental abode, they're desiring to see him. Just a different aspect of him. Of course, it is different because there's Aishwarya Bhav here. So, you know, you could say a servant in the, you know, mood of a servant, you would desire to see your master's opulence, like Narayan worshipped in Vaikuntha. So I think that's my understanding of that. Is that okay? question.
He says, those who desire to worship the demigods and make their faith stubborn.
I didn't catch the last part.
Those who desire to worship the demigods and make their faith stubborn. But knowing that this is detrimental to the spiritual upliftment, why he does this?
Well, it's not detrimental to spiritual upliftment. I mean, Krishna, whatever he does is perfect. So we understand the reason for the different demigods, is to govern the affairs of the universe. But if somebody gets attracted to the demigods for some return, they are thinking not on the material platform, at least they are considering there is a higher power. Okay, and if they at some point transform their desires into, and there are people like that, into desire, some level of worship that's without desire, like you worship Ganesh or Shiva, you might get attracted to some demigod, but if you had some tinge of lack of desire, these demigods can arrange to transfer you into the hands of a devotee. It's a gradual upliftment of devotees, of all. So, the Vedic system is compassionate in that way. It allows everybody a chance to become transcendentalist. If you recognize there's a higher power, then we become transcendentalist. And even though we might be at a very low level and very low desires, but we are on our way. But if you are materialists who don't believe, we are completely atheistic, that there is no higher power governing this universe, we have no hope. So they are better than the atheists. And so when Krishna makes their faith strong, he's bringing them along the path, and one day they'll reach there. That's my understanding. Question? There's also a hand here.
Yes, just a comment on that. Is those who worship the demigods is like walking up the steps, and those who worship Krishna are like going up in the elevator.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Hi, well, I just also to comment on what Shri Prabhu was saying, that he doesn't say that it's detrimental to spiritual life, but then like the verse right after, he says that they are worshiping me in the wrong way. So, and I just thought that was kind of clear. Also, I was wondering how come, because you were saying, you were thinking about like, well, if I come in contact with Krishna, then I could ask him certain things. And I was thinking from that statement that you made, like, the Vrajvasis have the highest position. And I was also putting myself in that position, like, if I am in contact with Krishna at like the high level, like, Goloka Vrindavan, I mean, like, really, I don't wanna like churn butter. So how come like if this like the highest, most elevated position, they're doing these activities, and it's really hard for me to like get into that mood, because like I don't want to like milk cows all day. I mean, I would probably get a cow if that's what I wanted to do. So why is this like the highest position? Why are those the activities that they do? And how can I see them as what I would want to do? Because I'm supposed to be meditating in that mind state. More than thinking of my career and stuff like that.
Great question. This is exactly the kind of thoughts that were going on in my mind. Ultimately, the subliminal thought was, well, I don't want to do this. So in other words, I don't want to be in Braj. So let me see if I can answer that. When we say, I don't want to, right, that means we're saying, I don't want what Krishna wants. So we want to serve Krishna. If we really want to serve Krishna, then we want to serve him in the way he wants to be served. Well, why is the Supreme Absolute Truth tending cows? That's because he enjoys it. But we are not the enjoyers. We are the servants. And in serving, we enjoy. So when we think about cows and milking, we think about it in mundane sense here. In this way, it's very difficult to do. I've never milked a cow. Don't plan to. Maybe I should now that you ask this question. But it's different because it's in Braj, when you're milking the cows, that's supreme transcendental ecstasy. You're going to look forward to it. You're going to love doing it because Krishna is getting pleasure out of it. So our mentality has to change. It does not mean we start milking cows right now. We follow the process. Prabhupada didn't say that the regulative principle is to milk cows. We follow the regulative principles. He told us to chant. Okay, and of course, he had lots of instructions for us, Varnashram. He wanted us to start, you know, communities with farms, and he wanted us to start maintaining cows and serving cows. So if there are efforts like that, we should get involved, and you'll see that it is actually not a very boring task. It's calming and soothing, I mean, pleasant. I had this discussion with a devotee recently about technology. She said, you know, I said, I don't like technology so much, which is jarring coming out of my mouth, because I'm at the forefront of research in this. But, so I said, you know, she said, well, washers and dryers, you know, if we didn't have washers and dryers, the women, all they would be doing is washing clothes on the river banks, and I don't want to do that. There is something to that, because that's the time we live in. But then I was trying to counter that by saying, well, if you go to the river, you see a flowing body of water, it's so calming and soothing. We're constantly being bombarded with iPhone, iPad, voicemail, driving 70 miles an hour, all the electronic gizmos. We have lost the simple pleasures of life. Washing clothes on the banks of the river might be really a very pleasant thing to do compared to checking email or putting clothes in the washer dryer. Because we are never grounded in our spiritual identity when we are constantly dealing with so many impulses to our senses. So the ladies in Braja, they are singing Krishna's glories while they are doing their chores. Well, can you do that when you're checking email? I mean, it's a hard thing to do.
It's a very interesting question. I think we also have to remember that we are still within these material bodies, material minds, and we have particular propensities based upon the current life that we're in. The residents of Vrindavan, of course, are working completely within their spiritual existence, in their spiritual bodies, or even in the case of in Vrindavan's material world, it's really not the material world. It's really the perfection of their spiritual existence. So while we're in these material bodies, we may or may not have these particular pastoral desires or aspirations, as we see in Vrindavan. So we work according to our propensities, and that's what Srila Prabhupada always taught us, to to do whatever our particular desire, propensity, ability is within this material body and mind that I have. And of course, we're also followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Sankirtan movement, and so, you know, we should use whatever we have to help preach and spread Krishna consciousness and become Krishna conscious ourselves. And then, you know, in a future lifetime, in a future spiritual body, then, you know, I may be then attracted to milking cows or whatever it may be. I don't think we have to worry about it too much at this time, you know, because my material mind may have so many desires. It's really, until I become very, very purified, I don't really know what my true spiritual desire is.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you very much. I think there's a hand there.
Just as an intellectual exercise here.
Uh-oh.
In Vrindavan, not everybody's milking cows. So, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of things you can be doing in Vrindavan. You know, just have to milk cows out of it. And then the other thing about the gopis, I think the greatest thing about the gopis is not that they're, well, I'm not knocking milking cows. I want to get that straight. But I think the greatest thing about the gopis is the quality of their love for Krishna, and it's manifest in that activity. So, you know, that quality is manifest in so many activities, so I don't think you have to necessarily get hung up on this specific activity. Is, you know, it's the quality of the love being expressed and manifest in unlimited activities that are going on in Vrindavan. You know, we have a sort of locked in on a few activities, which is fine, but there's just unlimited things going on in this Krishna's pastime.
Thank you. I think all these are much better answers than what I gave you, so forget everything else. Oh, there's a hand here also for some time.
We find in the writings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that the process for entering Braj is by chanting Nam, the holy name. And by doing that, and the association of Shuddha Bhaktas, of pure Bhaktas, and by doing that, our natural bhav automatically awakens, whatever that is, whatever our original position is, it automatically awakens. So, you know, it's not necessarily like a forced thing, like I have to force myself to enjoy this or that, because that's what they do in the spiritual world. It's just the process that we've been given by Lord Chaitanya is Nam Sankirtan, and it automatically awakens our natural bhav. And so, and then at some point our original Siddha Deha, our spiritual body, is revealed to us. You know, what is our original relationship with Krishna? So the process is chanting the name and the bhav automatically awakens at some point. And then, you know, it's not like a forced exercise.
Thank you. One hand at the back.
I was listening to a memory tape the other day, and Srila Prabhupada was telling this devotee that he said actually the Bhajari has the highest service because he's actually, he or she is doing eternal activities, making garlands, offering puja, cooking nice sweets, nice preparations, dressing Krishna, making jewelry, making clothes. In other words, we start to awaken the love of caring for Krishna in all those different ways through the deity worship. And so to engage in deity worship, you start to realize that you're doing something that's caring for Krishna, and it's an eternal activity. So it might be something to do to start entering into those eternal pastimes.
Thank you. Great question. Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.